Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share, and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast. Hey Griefsters, hope you're having an okay week. Just a reminder, we have a Griefcast live this Sunday, the 15th of September, 7 o'clock at King's Place, which is in King's Cross in London, as part of the London Podcast Festival. May I ask a favour, even if you can't come, would you mind spreading the word, tweeting about it, or telling someone you know who lives in London and is looking for something to do this Sunday? I'll be joined by Tom Parry, Jenny Bead, Kima Bob. You might not have heard of them, but they are brilliant stand-up comedians, all absolutely hilarious, and I cannot wait to have some cheery chats about death with them. Head to the King's Place website for more information. If you can't find us, some of you have been messaging me, you can't find us, just search Griefcast on the King's Place website and it should come up, and I will tweet about it again as well, so have a look on our Twitter if you want the link. This week I'm talking to writer Joel Golby. Joel has written for Vice, for The Guardian, for Heat magazine. He is a very, very hilarious writer whose work I've been aware of for some time. And he's also the author of his new book, Brilliant, 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 Brilliant. Five brilliants. Joel came in to talk to me about his dad, who died when he was 15, and his mum, who died 10 years later when Joel was just 25. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with writer Joel Golby, who is the author of the... How many brilliants does it? I'm just looking at it because I wanted
it's
to double-check.
It's five. It's really hard
brilliant,
to
brilliant,
say.
Brilliant,
it's
brilliant,
an
brilliant.
Arse-ache to say.
It's an arse-ache to say.
Yeah.
But it is brilliant.
But I didn't realise how annoying the title of my book is to A, say out loud, and B, fucking write when you're writing it down. Really, and also with the fun thing I was doing with the commas, so it's brilliant comma... Brilliant comma, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Oh, I hadn't even noticed that.
Yeah, so like that's erratic.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, you know, when you have to say spell your name over the phone.
Yes.
You must get
yes,
that a lot.
Yes, all the time. So do you get like, Golby? I bet you have to
Yeah, Golby is like, no one's heard Golby. That's a wacky surname.
I'd be like Dolby, but with a G.
Yeah, I do try that, but then everyone's like, what's Dolby? And then you surround sound, that's what it is. It's an irritating book title, but... A great book.
It is. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I knew your writing anyway. So, because you used to write for Vice. Mm-hmm. That's right, isn't it? Sorry, I'm always questioning myself.
No.
What else did you used to write for? Lots of online things.
I've written, like, Vice has been my main thing. That's how people know me. And then I've done Guardian stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then I used to work for Heat magazine as well.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Yeah.
So I've been for ages.
I knew your writing beforehand. And there's that thing when... Actually, Heat magazine is quite a good example. You know, sometimes like you find something funny and you think it's the magazine or something like that, and then you're like, oh, it's the same person writing all those things.
Yeah.
That's why I like that.
When you keep noticing the name, you scroll up and you're like, who is this again?
So I was very excited that you had written a book. And it's brilliant. It's a collection of essays.
Yes.
Which touches on, don't worry, Griefsters, there's a little bit of grief in there for you.
There's death. Don't you worry about
don't
that.
Don't you worry. But it goes over so much stuff. And the subtitle is Modern Life as Interpreted by Someone Who is Reasonably Bad at Living It.
Yeah.
That's very good. I like that.
But also long and irritated to say. We were like, how can we make the title worse to say and type, and we found a way to do it somehow.
Long titles are very fashionable now, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Like... but like on all the listings, it like runs out of room. That's how long. Yeah. I mean, I'm an overwriter anyway. That's how I go.
How are you? Do more and then edit down.
No, I never read it down. I just go like, well, yes, listen, here's what I've written. It's your problem now. Well,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I always feel really bad for overwrite. I overwrite and I always feel really bad. Like,
Own it.
I'm going to. You made just me feel better about it.
Yeah.
Because I always feel like, oh, I should have edited this better somehow.
No, no.
That's not
They're lucky to get the 50 extra words for free.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I get really angry with word counts, actually. That's why I like podcasts, because podcast is almost like the anti-word count. It can be whatever length it is.
Yeah, exactly.
And I really hate it when someone's like, the program's 29 minutes, so your script needs to... I think, fuck, it is that story isn't 29
minutes. It's as long as it needs
it's
to be.
As long as it needs to be, yeah.
Absolutely.
So, Joel, who are we remembering today?
The two people who made me.
And what are their names?
Oh, Tony was my dad. And Hazel was my mother.
I love that name, Hazel.
It is a good one,
isn't it? I love it. We had a Hazel recently. I really love Hazel.
Just any name with a Z in the middle. Just sort of, H, bit boring, A, whatever, hello. And then back, bring it back down again, E and L.
It's not brag,
no.
It's flashy.
No, it's exactly. It's just a little,
So Tony and Hazel, your mum and dad, and... which one of them died first?
So my dad died when I was 15. First
Snap.
Go.
Yes. Snap in
yeah,
the 15
exactly.
club. Yeah.
The 15ers.
Yeah.
And then mum when I was 25.
That just, I hope it's not irritating. It probably is. But I really feel for you, because to lose your mum 10 years after your dad at 15, fucking hell.
Yeah, it was unideal.
I know, that's how I feel, just because... Oh, yeah, it's just to be so young again. I mean, and obviously it's common. I get emails from people all the time saying, yeah. You know, that thing. So what did, let's go right back. So let's wind it back. What happened to Tony? How did he die? How did your dad die?
So I should start off by saying I've never talked about this
wow.
at all.
Okay, that's
so
fine.
I've written about it in the book.
Yeah.
I've written about it a couple of times, but I realised... when I knew I was coming here, like, I think yesterday I was just like, okay, let's think about the death again very briefly, just to make sure I'm, you know, refreshed and ready.
Yeah. To talk about it.
To chat about it. And then I was like, fuck, I have never talked about it. Like, I actually, the first article I ever wrote about my parents, which actually kind of was the article that put me on the map, so to
speak.
Yeah,
yeah.
A lot of my friends literally did not know that about me.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So you just had you joked about it or just always avoided the topic?
I just kind of, at one point, I think with my dad dying when I was 15, it became a part of my identity the same way like being right-handed is.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you know,
I get that,
you can't hear it, but I'm quite tall. And, like, that's just... People will say it to me and I'll remember. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry, I am quite tall.
Yeah, people say all the time, you're really short to me. And I'm like, oh, yeah,
oh,
I guess I am, yeah.
I forgot, yeah. I just kind of cope because I just adjust how much I reach for cabinets.
Yeah.
So I'm over it.
I
but
get
yeah,
a stall and it's fine.
This is new information to you. I understand. Enjoy it. And it's a bit like that with my parents. I'm just like, oh, shit, yeah, not everyone's parents are dead.
Yeah.
Like both of them.
I find that weird as well when I meet people who are like in their 30s and they're like both their parents are alive now or they say things like, oh, I haven't really experienced a death. And I think, oh, wow.
Yeah, that's wacky to me.
That's weird. Yeah, it's weird to me. I think they're weird,
yeah.
Which I like because for so long I thought I was this weird person that like, you know, this had happened to me and doing the show makes me go, oh, no, you're quite normal, actually.
Oh, it's nice to turn the tables.
Yeah, so nice.
And be
nice.
Like, no, you're the weirdo.
You're the
your
weirdo.
With your two parents.
With all your life people.
Enjoy that.
I know, I do find it strange. And then you have to be nice because you think, oh, I didn't like it when people made me feel weird. But here am I being like, oh, that's a bit weird that no one's died in your family. Like,
no, I make them feel bad for it.
So what did was Tony ill? Was it?
No. So my dad was an alcoholic.
Right.
So that was sort of part of him. So me being tall and an orphan is part of me. So, you know, when I was growing up, that sort of marked our family. Like that was part of the mood at home. And so when I was about, I think, 12, 13 or something, my parents split up and he moved out because he just could not stop drinking cider. And then essentially in those 2 years, he didn't have any anchor. He didn't have any sort of family base or anything like that. And because he was left to his own devices, he spiraled.
Yeah.
And that is what led to his death. So he died of basically his liver was too fat.
Right, okay.
And then he died.
Okay.
Because his liver was fat. You know.
Yeah.
Proper alcoholic way to go. Yeah.
That's not cirrhosis of the liver then.
Oh, yeah.
Cirrhosis. Is that what that is?
There we go.
Great.
Yeah, okay. 10 points. So yeah, he wasn't ill. It wasn't like he called up and was like, "Oh, my liver hurts today. Is that bad?" It was nothing like that. I was going to say what was quite difficult. I think your dad dying is difficult. It's like,
that's
let's play it on easy mode. Yeah, your dad's dead.
That
oh,
was fine.
How did he go? Oh, cool. So yeah, no, it was out of nowhere. It was just like, oh, he's dead now. It was just like, boom. It wasn't sickness. It wasn't descent. It wasn't expected. There were no warnings. No one was like, if your dad keeps going like this, he's going to die. It was just like the 1 a.m. phone call.
God.
Boom.
Because that's that funny. We always talk about that. The idea of film narratives does to you. And there is that film narrative, you know, with death, that you're going to get your last word. You don't. And there is that film narrative with alcoholism that, you know, they spiral and people say, "You've got to stop." And they go, "No, I'm not going to stop.
I'm not going to stop. You know what? fuck this and fuck you guys. I'm going to drink." And there's no background music that hints at anything.
No, to like make you ready. Like, oh,
that's what I like
dodgy.
In films. You're like, oh, that was a somber note. Hello. Watch
I
out for
love
this.
That because I always think, oh, someone's going to die.
Uh-oh.
And then I'm prepped.
Yeah.
I don't like it if they don't give me any warning.
No.
I need to know.
Oh.
It's triggering, guys.
And it's the same in real life.
Yeah,
it sucks.
Yeah.
Give me the music.
Yeah. So were you just at home? Did your mum like sort of wake you up and tell you?
It was one of those weird, both times, every time my parent has died. So it was a phone call, but I knew. Because it was a 1 a.m. phone call, which you always go like, this isn't going to be good.
No, it's not.
No
you
one
won the
calling
lottery.
You at 1 a.m. is like, "You all right? Yeah, I just wanted a chat. What's up?" It's like, it's a bad one. And I quite vividly remember that. I was just in bed, which is where I tended to be as a 15-year-old at 1 a.m. I was just tucked up in bed. And I remember like the hallway light. Because it was really, I think we put the wrong bulb in. It was too warm, so it was really yellow.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, when it's, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
I do know, because I hate putting the wrong bulb in. It's so annoying.
It's like, well, I'm not taking it out.
You can't take it down. It's just going to stay there till it
goes. I'm not going to get the ladder out again. Until that pings, it's going to be too yellow. So we had a yellow light bulb in, and it was too yellow. And I just, the hallway light was on at 1 a.m, and the phone had rung. And I kind of heard that, and I sort of, you know, I was like, oh, what's going on? And then you know you can hear someone like three rooms away having a conversation, and you hear the noises through the wall, and it was going on for a bit longer than what I would expect my mum to answer the phone and be like, it's 1 a.m. yeah. Call me in the morning. But the fact that the conversation went on a little longer, it was my sister on the other end, and the fact that that was going on for a while alerted me.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, the hallway light's on. Mum's on the phone. It's 1 a.m. Something's going on. And then I just knew.
Yeah.
I knew. And that was weird. And then, she didn't like go like, "Oh, you've probably figured it out, but your dad's dead." Like, she came upstairs and was like, she sat on the edge of my bed and was like, you know, Joe. She called me Joe, which isn't my name. It was a family thing. She never got out of that habit. But, you know, now she's dead and she stopped. And she was like, "Yeah, your dad's dead." And then I just sort of sat up and cried. And then we played cards all night, played a bit of rummy and stuff.
All
like
night?
That. Yeah. It's hard. You don't just sleep it off,
no,
do you?
No, you can't go back to bed, can you? It's too fucking weird and mad.
Yeah, we just sort of played cards in silence all night. There was no sort of...
Did your sister join you? So she's older?
Yeah, so my sister's 14 years older, but she lived in London at the time.
Right, okay.
Which is not where I'm from. So, no, she didn't join us for... I think she came up the next day or a couple of days later. But no, so we stayed up and then we were like, well, you know, let's call it in. And then, yeah, I mean, you know what? I didn't have to do anything. I was 15.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't have to do shit. It was great. I got 6 weeks off school. Six
wow.
weeks.
6 weeks? I didn't get bloody 6 weeks off school.
We should have asked for it.
I had to do my... I was like 2 weeks before my GCSEs.
Ooh.
So then everyone was just like, "Oh, what do you want to do?" And I remember just thinking, well, I don't want to do them next year. I'll just do them now. Like,
you don't want to be the freak who's still taking those classes.
Well, I just also like fucking... My dream, the whole of school was like, they promised once you did your GCSE maths, you wouldn't have to do it again.
Yeah.
So I was like, I can see it, guys. I'm going to do this maths. I'll never have to do it again. I'm get to A-levels and do creative topics. So I was like...
I'll do it so I don't have to do maths again.
Yeah, fucking
Dad,
hell.
Dad, if you make me do another year of maths by dying, so help me.
I mean, I was already angry with him. I'd be furious if he'd involve me doing maths again. Jesus Christ. So 6 weeks is nice. Did you
it was lush.
Did you talk about it at school, or did you just kind of like, did anyone know particularly?
Everyone knows everything at school.
Yeah.
Everyone figures shit out.
Yeah, yeah, well, because you've been gone for 6 weeks as well.
Yeah,
right?
Everyone was like, "What were you doing?" I was like, "Well, playing Xbox, got really good at Sega GT 2002. But I was lucky because there was another kid at school whose dad had died. And so it was like, I think someone had just said, "Oh, you know his dad's dead." I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." And that was the, like, before my dad died.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was the amount I cared about that.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean anything, does it?
No,
mean
it's
anything.
Nothing.
Because I had a girl in my year, my brilliant friend Hannah, who I'm still friends with, and her dad had died when she was 8.
Ooh.
And I definitely knew that before my dad died.
Yeah.
But it was like, all right, that's a fact.
Yeah.
There you go. And
that's
then when
it.
My dad died, she was like, "Hey." And I was
hey,
like, oh,
what's up?
I get it.
Yeah.
We now understand each other. But yeah, you're right. It's hard as a kid to... Because it's like you said, it's like someone saying, "Oh, we live in a bungalow," or "We have a swimming pool." You're just like, all right.
Okay.
That's what they have.
Yeah.
Okay.
So knowing how little I cared about his dead dad made me feel great, because I was like, well, I went back and I was like, there was no part of me that was like, "Oh God, everyone's going to be asking me about my dead dad." I was like, if everyone cares as little as I cared about that other kid's dad, I'll be fine. Who cares? Whatever. And
God.
School is like that, because as soon as you've made a joke at break time or whatever, you're back. No one's like, "Where were you for 6 weeks?"
Yeah, no, it doesn't really mean
they're
anything.
They're just like, because nobody cares, because you're 15 and all you care about is, like, you know, how many armpit hairs you've got. You're counting them every night. You're like, "Well, is this too many? Is this not enough? I don't know." And like, I think the lack of the pathological lack of caring for other people that comes from being a 15-year-old human being, actually played to my advantage.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting that you... I think that's kind of very wise at 15 to be like, "I know how to kind of play this system."
Yeah.
Like, I think that's kind of interesting.
Well, I had 6 weeks to think about it.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess I'm trying to think. Like, mine was obviously different circumstances, but yeah, I think I was glad no one really cared, but I don't think I really realised that it was more like because they were self... I just thought everyone was very self-involved.
Yeah,
but
they were.
I didn't think that was because they were teenagers. I thought they were bad people.
But did you want them to? Did you want them to care?
No, I didn't, actually. I had a real duel, like, I did and I didn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so you sort of wanted people to, like, give a shit sometimes, but then when they didn't, you were like, "Phew, thank God, I thought they were going to ask me something." Or, like, you know, if, like, a teacher got a bit like, "Is everything all right?" And you'd be like, "Oh, my God, please don't censor it. It's not all right. Don't censor it.
Yeah, don't."
And then I'd be like, "Yeah, it's fine." And they'd go, "Okay." And I think, "Oh, yes.
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 Scammed again."
Yeah, yeah. Which
Fuck
I feel,
you, geography teacher.
Exactly, which I feel so sad now, because I can see that they were sort of trying to talk and hoping I would talk to them. And I was like, "I'm not going to talk to you. You have to talk to me. If you're not going to talk to me, I'm going to talk to you." So then they just let me leave. And I was like, "Okay, great. Conversation over, thank God."
How many times did you... So when did you go back? back to school.
So it's a bit too, because I was like, because I'm like youngest in my year, so we did my GCSEs and then it was the big summer break. Then I went back for A levels.
Okay.
So then we had this weird thing, like at sixth form, you know, some people leave, some people don't.
Yeah.
So then it was like everyone was kind of didn't really know what happened.
Everyone turns up after that summer as a different person.
Oh my
anyway.
God. Some people suddenly like dyed their hair, got fashionable, lost the weight.
Yeah, yeah.
Suddenly they're the cool person. You're like, what the fuck happened to you?
What the fuck happened this summer?
Yeah.
What was I doing? Yeah. Look at you.
Look at you.
You play tennis now. It was just like everyone turns up as a different person. Because also because that's normally the break when you don't have to wear uniform.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you suddenly discover that some people can really fucking dress.
Yes.
And you're like, holy shit, okay. And also, you discover who's rich.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're like, oh, okay.
Were you going to ask me how, you sound like you're going to ask me how often I played on it. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How often you played, because the first day back.
Oh, dead card, yeah.
You have a little meeting with your head of year, and they're like, if you're ever struggling, just know, you can walk out of a class, all of your teachers have been informed, you just go to the front desk and you tell them you're having a hard time.
That's not what happened in my life, in my school.
No?
No, I fucking wish that happened, yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah, no one ever said, that was, I played it, definitely, because you do, but nobody. I think my head of year was a very lovely lady, and she might have said, you know, come to me, but I was never allowed to walk out of lessons, ever.
Well, here's the thing.
I would have walked out of every single fucking lesson if they'd said that.
No, you wouldn't.
Oh, okay.
I only did it once.
Oh, really?
Because you're given that powerful card, and you're like, I don't want them to retract it, so you're scared to play it.
That's good play, good mind games from the head of year.
Yo, they fucking knew what they were doing. They'd already had the dead dad kid.
Yeah,
they know what they're doing. So they were like, walk out of class at any time. So obviously I didn't, because I was like, well, oh God. So I did it once. There was just one, you know, 6 weeks is ages. So I had, I'm not saying I processed the whole thing.
No, it was a long time in 15-year-old land.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when I came back, I was, I got over the hump.
Over the worst of it.
Yeah, okay.
Still sail through now.
Yeah, he's definitely gone. So there was just one class. I remember it was a geography class. And yeah, I was just like, I don't even think I was thinking about death or thinking about my dad or anything like that. Mm. It was just, when it happens to you when you're that age, it just colours a lot of the already raw, fucking hard-edged emotions you're feeling anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I was just having one of those days that perhaps you have as a teenager where your head is full, you're thinking about everything at once, it's too much, and I could not be asked listening about Oxbow Lakes. And I was
the only thing I remember.
Every time. Yeah. It's either that or those fucking sand dune things, those banks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those are good. But yeah, I was just like, I just couldn't focus. Everything was going on. I was like, I just can't be here today. Early afternoon. I'd survived the morning, done lunch. And I was like, I fancy knocking off early. And I didn't, again, with the card, if you walk out of a class without saying anything, everyone's going to be like, what the fuck? So it makes you more of a target. It makes you more noticeable. And when, you know, when you're feeling like that, you just don't want to be noticed.
Yeah, you
want to
be under the radar so badly, don't you?
So, yeah, I just, I think there'd been a couple of lessons before where I was like, maybe I want to leave, but actually I don't want to have to stand up. And again, to reiterate, to the microphone, I am very tall, so when I get up, you fucking know about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, I don't want to stand up in front of this class, walk silently out of it, and close the door behind me, because I'd rather sit here and just not concentrate than make everyone see me. And there was just one class where I was like, nah. And it was quite a tactical thing. I was like, so when I'd made the decision in my head, you know how you
prepped it,
you toy with the idea and then you're like, no, we're actually doing this. And then I was like, well, I was just suddenly like, okay, well, where's my coat? My coat is on the back of my chair. Where's my bag? What's the most like smooth and elegant way I can, like, what one motion can I make with my arm to get the bag, stand up, and then hook the coat as we go, and we're out. And it was like, because if I stand up and I'm faffing,
everyone's like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Why are you stood up? What are you doing? Oh, dickhead, we'll learn about lakes. That was not.
Yeah, that's
not. I could
plan.
Not do that. So I was like, this has to go well. This has to be smooth.
How did you feel when you walked out? I remember those sort of moments of just feeling like you said, so overwhelmed with things.
It made me feel instantly better, yeah. Which is obviously like, okay, cool. We've made a good decision here. Because I.
Well done, brain.
Yeah, because my teacher was talking when I did it. Mm. And yeah, I got up and got out. He didn't say anything to me because, you know, I think all my teachers have been briefed. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. Watch the nutter. He's going to go mad. He's going to walk out. So he just kind of gave me a look. It was quite an understanding look, actually. I remember locking eyes with him. And it wasn't a nod. It wasn't an anything. It wasn't question. It was just like, okay. It was quite an accepting, like, all right, you do what you have to
yeah.
do. And then, yeah, I got out. And then to go home... I'm a real stickler for rules and authority,
oh,
and it
wow.
makes me sick, but it goes against a lot of who I am as a person, but then also, I just respect authority.
Oh,
and so,
wow.
And so, like, I'd already walked out of class. I could have just walked out the back of school and gone home,
yeah.
but instead I went to the front desk and was
no,
like,
Joe.
just to explain what I'm doing. My dad's dead and I'm going home. And like, but
bless
that
you.
was the awkward part because I was like, you know, got the coat, got the
Mate,
rucksack.
Mate, you could have sailed out of there.
I could have just fucked Ferris off.
Ferris Bueller style. Just like, fuck you guys, see you later.
But I respect the rules. Okay, so
I don't respect rules at all. So I would have been out and
nah,
gone.
So I like signed out. But that was the awkward part because the receptionist obviously hadn't
yeah,
been briefed.
Yeah.
So so what again? You're doing what? I'm like, I'm going home. It's fine. Mrs. Bell said it's okay for me to leave because my dad's dead. And she's like, oh, well, you've got to sign the form. I was like, I'll sign the form. Just the bus is coming. It's once every 25 minutes. Let me sign the form and go. And I think I had to wait in a little queue as well. You know when,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
when
yeah.
you're like, you know, when you're 15 and you feel a bit sick at school and you have to go and beg off at the receptionist.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm feeling a bit ill.
I
and my mum's
going
to
yeah.
come and pick me up. So there's like a queue of about two people, then I'm like, my turn. Yes, hello. I want to go home because I'm extremely depressed about my dad being dead.
I'm grieving. Do you have a form for that, please?
I'm going to knock off the last two classes. One of them's drama anyway, so it doesn't matter. I'm going to go home.
You just stick around, guys. It's fine.
That's all it is. So, yeah, I remember doing that. And then I went home and did what I always did at that age, which was compulsively play the same racing game that I think when my dad died, I was like, well, fine, I'm going to play. It was Sega GT 2002.
Yeah, why not? Whatever you got to do. You need to block something. I watch soaps.
Yeah.
I got obsessed with soaps. I've told this story before. Like, we already watched Neighbours and Corrie. My mum loves Corrie.
Normal.
But then I started watching Home and Away, Neighbours, Hollyoaks, EastEnders, Corrie.
Too much.
And then I added in Emmerdale.
Ooh.
So I would be in front of the telly from about 5 o'clock, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was when my mum came in one time and she was like, are you watching Emmerdale? And I said, yeah. She was like, it's too much.
Yeah.
For her, that was the line.
That's
it. Yeah. She's
come
like,
on.
You're not okay.
Not Emmerdale.
And because we'd never watched Emmerdale.
No.
We'd done, like,
why would you?
I know. But like Home and Away, you'd watch every now and again, so you sort of knew who Alf and Pippa were.
Home and Away was between the end of Kids TV and the start of Simpsons.
Yes.
That was the half hour
yeah,
slot.
Yeah, yeah.
So no one's judging you for that.
No, exactly.
But when you're going out your way
to watch Emmerdale.
Also at tea time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when you're having your waffles and beans.
Yeah, yeah.
Emmerdale.
Oh, we had waffles and beans early.
Oh, you were you were one of those families.
Oh, but don't judge, because I can know what you're thinking. I'm talking waffles and beans on a tray so that my mum can watch Neighbours at the same time.
That's too early to have your dinner.
How do you think?
What, if you're having your dinner to Neighbours, that's too fucking early.
Oh, we'd always have dinner at Neighbours, yeah.
That's...
Fresh Prince at a push.
That's fucked up.
Would you wait till 7?
Firstly, there's an hour between those two slots. Neighbours was either 5:30 or 5:45, and then Fresh Prince was 6:30 after The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Maybe it depends on what... I'll have to talk to my mum. This is a difficult subject.
Yeah, it is. We're getting real here.
We're getting real.
5:30 is too early to have your tea.
Yeah, no, we'll have tea about 5:30. That's my mum. She likes tea early. Because then she says you can have your bath, go to bed. You're done.
Well, why do you want to rush through the day? You know what?
She really
tired
likes,
of this.
Yeah, she's sleepy.
Sleepy.
Tired. Tired lady.
She's a tired woman.
I guess maybe her husband had died. She was just like...
Oh, that again.
That again, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe. Maybe we had it early beforehand. Did you and your mum, did you talk about it? Was it like present in your life, or was it one of those things that didn't come up so much? Because he wasn't living there anyway, I guess, so...
No. Never.
Never spoke about it?
No. And that's actually when I was listening, when I was doing my homework and listening, you've mentioned a few times, like, you're a talker.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what made me kind of realise that actually... I am not.
But you're a writer.
Yeah, exactly.
You're a writer.
Just write it down.
Yeah.
But no, we never... I think one Christmas, I think maybe the first Christmas, because he died in January.
Oh, wow.
So by the Christmas, it was like... And also his birthday was in February. So the first birthday...
So you kind of did all the big marks.
Yeah,
at
you're
the
like,
top.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, don't have to buy anything. Cool. And then Christmas, the first Christmas, it was a bit like... Well, this is weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we're a small family. There are about seven of us. So we're not a big unit anyway. So once you lose one, that's like a big percentage of your family. It's like, oh, okay. So the first Christmas, it was definitely like, as well, because Christmas is something I take very seriously.
Oh, dear.
And is... built on routines. And what did we do last year? Well, that was nice. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
And then Christmas is the same every fucking year. And so because it wasn't, that was like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have a chat about that. And it was like, I think I remember us having a conversation then. But no, we didn't talk about it.
Did anyone like send you to counselling or anything like that?
No.
Or, yeah.
I remember once I think it was another one of those, like, I came downstairs because Mum was on the phone very late and she was crying on the phone, and I think she'd called, like a sort of grief counselling hotline. Hello, grief. She'd called something like that. And I remember feeling quite... She was like, you know... She was crying, but also she offered the phone. She was like, you know, would you like to talk to them? I was like, no. I was 15. I hated talking on the phone. I was like, what, talk to a stranger?
Absolutely no way.
On the phone? Absolutely fucking not. Like, that was the worst. My mum was a big phone woman. She loved to have long chats on the phone. And her and my cousins would, like, they would talk fucking forever. And at the end of every one, she'd be like, she'd call me down, like, Joe, again. Joe, phone. And then I'd have to just do a tight five. Just like, yeah, okay, yep. School. Going to give you back to Mum. And so I hated talking on the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
That was an idea of hell for me. So, yeah, she offered me the phone crying. I was like, no.
No.
And then, but I remember feeling it was years until I had that memory again. And I was like... I didn't recognise that she was feeling it.
Mm.
I didn't realise that that was her going through it. Essentially, we both left each other alone to deal with it ourselves, which made sense because we were both very different people. And so we wouldn't have grieved the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, she called a hotline and that helped and cool. And I'm sure she talked to my sister and the family about it. But we didn't talk to one another about it because... Yeah.
But it's so individual. It's so individual. And I think that makes perfect sense. Like, my family are all talkers.
Yeah, your chat is...
We... Fucking hell, mate. Phone calls are just unbelievable.
It's endless shit.
Yeah, just endless. And, like, I remember that. There's a particular memory that people won't have anymore. But, like, you're right, of, like, a mum on a landline.
Yeah.
Like, my mum in the 80s on that landline.
All the time.
Aunt Sheila's on the phone. I'm just going to speak to my Uncle Alan's talking because Jenny's hurt foot. And you just get...
Constant.
Hours. But, yeah, we are talking. So we did talk about it a lot, but I don't think it's weird to not talk about it. I think especially if you're, you know, we talked before he died. Do you know what I mean? Like, so that was our base. Our base was like family meetings every Sunday.
Yeah,
like everyone talking.
Yeah,
Sometimes not doing as much listening as they should do. A lot of talking. So it was always going to be like that. And if that's your base beforehand, like that's, I think sometimes death doesn't, like you said, death doesn't clear up the table.
No.
Like stuff stays there.
Yeah.
And just because one person's gone doesn't mean suddenly you're going to become different people. And if you weren't... if that was your relationship before. So
I was never a communicator before, so I wasn't going to become one at a stroke.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't... like, yeah, that's not how the world works.
Well, like, Dad's died, and I've learned how to, how to fucking talk now.
Let's do this.
Go.
Yeah.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So, when your mum died, you were 25.
Yes.
So, had you left home by then?
Yeah.
And what did she die of?
That was a brief dance with cancer.
Oh, okay.
Brief little jig. It didn't take long.
Cancer was it?
Liver. So liver ones. Yeah. So yeah, it was just like January cancer, June dead. Just boom.
Oh fuck. Boom. Yeah. Boom. Yeah.
So again, it was like that one was slightly more telegraphed, but it was still, and again, it was, I remember the phone call. I was hungover and I woke up at 6 a.m, which was weird.
Yeah.
I like woke up with it was a proper hungover pose, and it was a proper 25-year-old single male in London where I had... I feel like everyone in their 20s has collapsed an IKEA bed and then just taken the middle bit out and just slept
on it. It's fine. Actually, it's all right.
It's all right. When you're 25, you can sleep on anything. Yeah. When I turned 30, I made one resolution, which is I'm never sleeping on a sofa again.
Oh, no.
And that was it. I was like, I'm 30 now. Grow up.
Yeah.
But when you're 25, you can sleep on fucking anything.
Yeah.
And I was asleep on a mattress within a bed frame. I was face down, like, dribbling on a mashed up pillow, proper, like, hungover pose. And then I woke up quite abruptly at 6. I was like, well, that's weird.
Mm.
And then I looked at my phone first thing, as I do every single fucking day of my life. And then I had, like, 2 missed calls from my sister. So I was like, oh, I know what this one is. And then I called her back. And she was like, I can't remember the exact sentence, but I remember she called me mate. So she was like, yeah, your mum's dead, mate. But not that. It wasn't but I was, that was the thing that my brain caught. Not the information that she was dead. Yeah. I was like, why did she just call me mate?
That's the second time we've had that. Like, Marco Sullivan, who does Lee and Dean, his sister had to ring him and she said, mum isn't alive anymore. And he said that's what got him, was like, what? Why would you say that? And obviously it's that brother-sister thing. Your first thing is an annoyance. You're like, what's wrong with
you? Why would you do that?
So she's dead. Yeah. But it's obviously trying to, you know, you don't have, you can feel for the sister being like, how do I, I've never had to say this before.
All right, cheers, mate.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Like, your mum's dead, mate. All right, mate, see you later.
All right, thank you. I remember the first thing, what I said to her was, how can I help you? Which sounds bizarre, but
no, I get it.
It was like, we'd done this before.
Yeah.
And actually, because my sister's older, she's 14 years older, and technically, if we're going to get it out, she's my half-sister, we have different mums. And so when I was 5, she just started uni.
Wow,
and when I was 8, she just moved to London.
Yeah.
So we weren't close growing up because I saw her once a year.
Yeah.
So I'd see her either on a birthday or at Christmas or whatever. So when Dad died, we were that made us a bit closer.
Mm.
With every cloud.
Yeah.
But like
yeah.
that's so when she called and was like, "All right, mate, your mum's dead, mate." I was like, "Okay, we go again."
Yeah.
We've done this before. And it was like the similarities were different things. They were different griefs. Is that griefs?
Yeah.
That works.
Why not?
They were different griefs and the similarities were so weird. So one thing that happened was we called the same like funeral place.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a small town. There's only about three places
in
the
They give you good
book.
Service?
Listen, they did a good job last time.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go back. Maybe we'll get a fucking stamp card. Third one's on us. And the guy came over. What I've written about it in the book a few times, but my mum had very erratic taste in interior decor.
Oh yeah, I think that was amazing, that bit about your mum's house.
Yeah, we had the kitchen was pink and we had to paint it white because nobody wants to buy a house with a pink kitchen. That's just a very simple fact. It's a very odd choice of interiors. I think she was ruined by changing rooms. I blame Lawrence Lauren Bowen still. So we, you know, the house we had growing up was weird. It was weird. And our front room was like terracotta orange with an eye level thin gold line painted right around the room.
I read about that and you're right, it is that real changing rooms when everyone started doing shit to their house but not always knowing what they should be doing. Stenciling and the line round to mimic the kind of dado rails. But in houses that wouldn't have ever had them anyway.
We had curtains. She was a very good seamstress, my mother. She was very good at making fabric things. Lost my words there.
Working with textiles.
There we go. Yeah, she was very good with a sewing machine. And so, you know, she made all the curtains in our house. And our front room in the summer had linen curtains. But she went down the road because we had our Rhodes First Indian family moved in a couple of years before. And she went to go and speak to the mum and ask her to write things in, I want to say Sanskrit, but I'm not quite sure.
Could be Hindi or Urdu or Sanskrit. Yeah,
but not a language or even alphabet we were familiar with. And then she hand painted those on the curtains.
Wow.
And then in a bright orange room with a gold line. So it was mayhem in there.
It was bold.
It was bold.
It's bold, yeah.
So when the funeral guy came in, he sat down, he sort of, you know, he got his folder out and then he looked around. He was like, I know this room. Because that's the kind of room it was. You were like, yeah, if you've been in this one.
It's not going to leave you.
That's not going to leave you. And then he was like, have I done this before? And we were like, yeah, you did that.
Yeah.
He's like, Yes, I did.
Oh, I remember.
And
gold
it's
line.
Still orange. Yes, it is. Yep. Not for long, but yes, it is. And so that was the moment where it properly me and my sister looked at each other yeah, we're doing this again.
Yeah.
And it was annoying because because when I was 15, I got to duck out of everything.
Oh yeah, you don't really have to deal with all that big stuff. I remember conversations that were happening because my dad had a business that had to be dealt with. I remember conversations and not understanding them at all. Yeah. But yeah, you don't have to go through any files and deal with shit.
You don't have to do shit.
Yeah.
6 weeks off, Sega GT, nobody bothers you.
Yeah.
And they do all the shit. But then when I was 25, I was like, all right, I'll help this time.
Yeah.
And immediate grief. Is bad. Obviously, what's worse is the fact that you are suddenly given the world's most boring admin job, and it's tedious,
it's so
and
tedious,
relentless,
yeah.
And it's such. You have to sort out so much shit, and then that's the thing, you forget, and you're like, oh, okay, mum's dead. I'm gonna have to make 8 serious phone calls today we've got to call the funeral home and we've got to make sure that the people who have the body now are still the people we want to bury them with. Because if you choose a different one, then I think they have to put in a jiffy bag and DPD it over.
You know what DPD are like as well.
Exactly. They just, they throw it over the fence. We couldn't deliver it, we threw it over the fence. It's with your neighbour. Hi, can we get mum? Yeah. And so that was part of it as well. So we had to call that. We had to figure out what we had to do. And also because we didn't live in the town and we both had to get the train up. And it was feeling our way around again, because I'd moved out about 5 years before, 4 years before, and I remember the first day I went for a pint and I saw an old friend who was like the bartender, where I'd gone to a really random pub that I'd chosen because I knew no one I knew would be there, like one in the middle of town. He was like, "Oh, why are you back?" I was like, "Oh, mum's dead." He was like, and he pulled the pipe. He was like, "You're serious, aren't you?" I was like, "Yeah." He was like, "Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten what you're like. Yes, yes, you're, yeah, okay."
Okay.
It was like feeling your way around the town again, also navigating the admin job. And then underneath all those layers of coats, you're like, "Oh, by the way, you're sad."
Yeah, yeah, that's such a good way of putting it, because it is almost, by the way, like you're dealing with all this other stuff and it's like, "Oh yeah, by the way, that is happening." You're like, "Oh yeah, fucking hell, that's why this is even harder."
Yeah.
Anyway, did you have to, obviously you did you sort the funeral? Did you speak at the funeral?
No, not my vibe.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It would have been weird and horrible.
At least you're aware. That's the main thing. Some people get up anyway. Yeah. I've been to those funerals. You're like, mate.
Come on.
Not your vibe, not your skill. That's fine.
It's okay if you're not a public speaker. But also, like, my favourite go-to joke, because obviously I was so irritated afterwards. Mm. I was just trying to make jokes out of everything. And everyone was sick of my shit, but my go-to joke was just saying in a very soft voice, like, "It's what she would have wanted." So about everything, like, I'd be choosing what I like, we're at a restaurant and I'd be choosing my dinner, and then I'd be like, "It's what she would have wanted. I'm gonna have steak and chips.
It's what she would have wanted.
And so I was really...
It's a good joke.
It's a cracking joke.
But I imagine if I was your sister, I'd be like, "All right, mate.
All right. You have a funny one, are you?"
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so no. Because, very truly, she would have hated that.
Oh.
And I
it's not what she would have wanted.
No, no, not at all. I knew my mother, and I knew that she would not have wanted that. But we actually had... We're not a religious family, and she hadn't left full funeral plans or full, like, she hadn't signed her will, which was such an arsehole. We got it written out and she didn't fucking sign it.
Oh no, she just needed to sign it.
She just looked at it and went, "Nah, I'll never die." Like, stupid.
Oh,
so
no.
We had to do probate and stuff like that, which was so annoying because we fucking had it.
Oh,
and
God,
my sister was fuming because she was... it was basically like she'd sorted it as part of... My mum had a very small amount of mortgage left.
Yeah.
And my sister's husband had enough savings to cover it. And so he basically paid her mortgage off so she could retire a little bit earlier and then pay it back to him at like a lower interest rate. It was like $6,000. It was but to do that, she had to get the will. So that was a tedious part of sorting that out that they did. And so when she found this unsigned...
Oh my God!
She was like, that motherfucker, how... Like, she was fuming because obviously...
Of course, and you want to go back to that person and be like, "I told you to sign it.
One signature, Mom. That's exactly. All you had to do."
They can still be annoying when they're dead.
Yeah, that's it. That's how they get you back.
Yeah.
So that was like, we were all just, "Oh, for fuck's sake." Because we knew we had to go through probate and it meant extra forms and extra admin. And it was so... annoying to be holding the piece of paper that could have smoothed a lot of edges over.
I've been annoyed for you because so many people don't even have the will, and you're like, "Well, you never even had the conversation, so don't think about it."
But don't worry about
it. You had it.
You had it written in legalese, which we paid to do. You just had to sign it. So, she hadn't left full funeral plans, but you know, she'd always made it clear that she wanted to be cremated and she wanted like a humanist service. Mm. So, yeah, we had the weird experience of a humanist guy coming from a couple of towns over. And, yeah, he sat in our front room and we had to tell him everything about our mum. And it was weird. And it was weird as well what I was learning.
Yeah.
Because they ask questions that you can't necessarily always answer. So it was like, "Well, where was your mum born?" I was like, "Good one."
good ooh, question. Good start. Yeah.
Ooh. Don't know. And my, you know, my sister knew things and I knew things. And it was quite interesting, I suppose, to have the other sibling fill in the gaps.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, "Oh, you knew that. I didn't know that." And then...
Especially if she's 14 years older as well, so it must be completely different experiences of those parents.
Yeah. She'd basically always known my mum when essentially as an adult.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't.
Like, yeah,
I
grew up with
that. So yeah, your mom never really sits you down and goes like, "Well, I was born in a small village, two towns away from where I grew up. Actually, just quirk of fate, and then we moved there, and then I grew up there, and then we." It's like it just doesn't.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it was quite weird to. That's a very strange experience when you're going through the great, huge, grinding gears of grief, and also the smaller, more immediate tedium of administration, and then a man comes to your house and asks your mom's life story via a questionnaire.
Yeah, so, via a design questionnaire, yeah. Obviously, because then they have to talk about them.
Yeah, they're like tapping it with, what else have we got here?
Need a little bit more on the top, maybe. Yeah. Like, a bit more where she started from. Is that, can we get
yeah,
there?
Yeah, can we have an arc? Where's the jeopardy?
Yeah, I feel like we need a bit more where we worry about her. Just in the middle, maybe.
It's
yeah.
fine. You know, a little wobble and then yeah. oh, pulls it through.
And you've written about... Like, I think it was serialised. Well, it was a... What's the word I'm looking for?
Extracted.
Yeah, thank you. A clip. There was a clip in The Guardian.
Clippy.
As, of the essay being an orphan, which I thought was really brilliant, 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 brilliant.
Thank you.
About, like, trying to dispose of the ashes and stuff. Because, yeah. like, that's another thing. We haven't really talked about much on this show, actually. But, like, they just give them to you in a tub. And how awkward it is... to deal with the tub.
I really wish they didn't do that because yeah. every time we've got the tub, and it is literally like...
It's like an ice cream tub from the 80s, isn't it?
Does yeah. your mum do that? You get a 2 litre vanilla ice cream tub and then she reuses it to go yeah. in the freezer.
That's useful.
And you're like, oh shit, ice cream. And then, oh, it's bolognese again. Fooled again. And then, so it's literally like as close to that kind of tub. And you're like, okay, weirdly heavy. And that's my mum.
Yeah.
And it's weird because, like, again, we didn't really know what she wanted. So, like, with the music, we didn't know what she wanted for the funeral. Yeah. So we're, like, going through CDs and, like, what did she like? Because she wasn't really a very active music listener. Yeah. Neither am I. It's just we didn't really have music in the house. So it would be so rare that she would sit and put a CD on and listen yeah, to yeah. it. So there was no... She had like fucking 3 CDs. It was like, did she like this?
Did
she get
free
it free with
yeah,
a newspaper?
Yeah, that's what some of my mums are free with a newspaper.
That's mums love those.
They love them.
They love that
them.
Shit. Landlines and free CDs in a cardboard sleeve.
Oh,
love that shit.
Dream.
So we were like trying to figure out what she'd picked up from the Times and what she actually liked and having that conversation. And she liked to see. She loved a paddle. She was scared of flying, which is like a late onset fear. She used to travel a lot as a young woman and then she stopped. So, you know, we always had British holidays and she loved the British seaside and she loved Whitby and Scarborough and Filey and stuff like that. So we went up to Filey, which is where we'd had a lot of good sort of childhood holidays. And we got the gang back together. We had to make all the phone calls to make sure our family could make a specific Saturday. And we walked out onto a sort of grey, windy beach with a 2.5 pounds of ground-up mum in an ice cream tub. And then we went, well, what the fuck now?
Yeah.
Because we didn't know. We were like, well, what, dump it in the sea? So I remember my cousin... just digging a hole.
Well, you didn't know what to do, did
but,
you?
But because we hadn't planned it, didn't have a spade or anything.
Oh,
so just
God.
Sort of like...
Like start, a dog.
Yeah, starting off with like the hands like, and then just being like, this is degrading.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like, I think like my cousin's kid like turned up like with a bucket and spade. So we actually sort of dug a little groove out. And then we're like, all right, well, all right, everyone do a bit. And we sort of all dabbed it in the hole, bit of sand over it. And then we kind of looked at this sort of smudge on the beach and we're like, that's not enough. So we all started making a sandcastle over it.
Oh, that's nice.
It was, but it was also weird. It was just no one knew what they were doing. We were all making it up as we went along.
Yeah, but this is the thing. I think it's really interesting because so many, maybe this is unfair, but I think it's probably true that so many people now aren't particularly religious.
Yeah.
So in olden times, we would have just done a religious ritual. We wouldn't have to think about it. But now we live in this, you know, enlightened world where you might be like, oh, well, I understand what religion is, but I don't have to follow it.
Yeah.
So then the rituals become like, what do we?
Well, what the fuck
what
do we do?
Because 100 years ago, someone would have said, put it in there, yeah, say this prayer,
do that,
go home.
Say that, yank it off. The one good thing you can say about religion is they fucking know what to do with a dead body.
They really do. They come into their own.
Down.
And I do think, like, of all, you know, we've talked about all the religions so many times, but like, if you're not religious, that's when it can be a bit of a shitter.
Yes,
because the religious is like, we got you. Even if you haven't been to church or synagogue or, you know, the mosque for 20 years, we got you.
Come
hither, we know what we're doing.
We know.
We got the prayer, we got the ceremony.
We got the space out back in the graveyard. That's ours.
That's ours for
you don't
this
have
reason.
To go to a beach.
You don't have to
we
dig.
We got the space.
We got the space.
Give us your corpse.
We've got the people with the spades.
We know what we're fucking doing. And then you're just on a beach in Filey going, oh, I wish I loved God.
Because it would make it easier.
It really would.
But yeah, you wrote about it really beautifully and very funnily about the awkwardness of disposing with ashes and things like that. What did you do with your dad's ashes?
He liked golf.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I read this. Sorry.
And he was from Wolverhampton. So we drove down to Wolverhampton, where he was from, and found the first golf course he ever fell in love with.
Right, okay.
But no one told the golf course. So we had to sneak up the back. And, like, literally two carloads of family had to sneak down, like, a back lane. And we had to like, go through sort of... We had to find a gap in a bush, and then it was like a sort of scrabble downhill, like covered in weeds and stuff, no perches. You know when you look at a hill and you're like, no one's walked on that in like 15 years because there's no path. There's
for
no
a reason,
nothing,
yeah.
For a fucking reason.
It's steep.
So you're going up it like, you know, after you walk sideways, doing that with like ice cream top of dad. And then we're on the back and it was like, I think it was... not the first birthday without him, but like the second one, because obviously the first one it was just too immediate, but like the second one, so yeah, it was February, it was grey, it was raining, it was windy, there were no leaves on the trees.
Oh, God.
As I said, we're just among all these sort of thin trees on the back of a golf course, like with wet, mulchy, like brown, crunchy leaves beneath us, sneaking, like all ducked down, like half cowed, because either we were getting a bit of tree was like catching us or whipping us, or we were trying not to alert a golf course who would be like, stop
what you're
pick
doing.
That up. So we're all just in a little scrubby bit of woodland. And then again, we were just like, well, we've done it. We've snuck on. What now? And we just, like, someone just bust the tub and just threw a bit on the floor. I was like, well, all right, everyone do this. And we just passed it around. I remember my sister's mom, who was still technically my dad's widow, which was another fun one, another fun bit of admin, because they never got divorced, even though, you know, he moved out and started a whole new life and had an entire son with another woman. But they just never went through the actual rigmarole of getting divorced, because they were fine, they were in touch, it was whatever, no need. And then when it actually came round, it was like, really would have been helpful if you guys got a divorce and if you married, but like that. So yeah, but I remember his widow handing me the tub, and I was like, okay, dunk. And it was like blowing around, and we had to avoid it. And like, it wasn't like the Lebowski full, like, pelted face full of ash, but it was like, you know, you sort of step away from something so you don't get it on your legs. And I was like, full arm stretch to dunk a bit of dad on a golf course we weren't allowed on. And that again, I was like, he would have loved this.
That's nice. That's nice.
Yeah.
I think there's something really human about that. And I think that's, if you haven't been through it, you can have this idea of what it should be. Was actually, most people I know who've had to spread the ashes, it's a bit weird. It's a bit awkward.
Yeah.
But they might have they probably would have enjoyed it and found it fun. Like, it's,
yeah,
you know, because we avoid, like, the, and I think that's what the book in that essay particularly readdresses, like the messiness of life.
Yeah,
yeah, spreading the ashes and stuff like that is, it's weird and awkward and, but that's like when someone dies. It's not like, you know, angels don't appear and take them away.
No.
The music doesn't start and the credits don't roll. And that's what I fucking hate about most of life. I'm like, where's the fucking credits? The credits were here now. This would be a good day, but I have to carry on.
We got
to
do this again tomorrow.
We got to do this again.
Again.
Again. Unbelievable. But yeah, I think that's really, yeah, it's very, it's a truth to that, which is really nice. It's really nice to hear. So, How many years are you, if you don't mind sharing your age, how many years are you in now to, so?
So I'm 31.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, six years of orphan life.
Yeah.
And I say that reluctantly because people sometimes get mad at me online.
Oh, why?
For calling myself an orphan.
But surely you are an orphan.
I think so.
That's
yes.
A bit, guys online, just everybody chill. Why is that bad?
Because I didn't lose them when I was a kid.
Oh, is that what orphan means?
No, but some orphans get mad about it. Yeah, 6 years without. And again, that now it's just sort of part of who I am.
Mm.
But for a while, it wasn't. Like, for a while, I think I didn't realise that I wasn't coping very well.
Mm. And yeah, that's pretty common.
I thought I was smashing it. I was like, I am so fucking good at having a dead mum. I am crushing this. And then one day, about 2 years later, I realised that I hadn't really...
hadn't smashed it.
I hadn't smashed it and I hadn't confronted it.
Mm.
I just sort of let it wash over me. And also, a lot of that is to do with, in the immediate aftermath, when you should be grieving, you have this admin job to do,
yeah.
And so you delay it. And then when you get back to, you know, get back to your real life, so when I left Chesterfield and came back to London, I was like, okay, well, it was sort of compartmentalised.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want to bring that down here. I don't want to talk to all my cool, trendy London mates about that.
Mm.
I just want to get rid. And actually, my sister called me and was like, hey, mate, dead mum, come to Chesterfield. And I was like, okay. And so I went and I just sort of boomed out of town. I didn't tell anyone.
Mm.
Actually, there's two stories about the first day. I'll hit you with both. But the first one is, I just left. I put, like, I did a really disorientated backpack. Because
yeah.
I was like, I just wanted to take carry-on.
Yeah.
I didn't want any luggage or anything like that. So I was like, and I just, it was so erratic. I ended up taking, like, 3 pairs of trousers. A mad amount of trousers.
Yeah.
Just a psychotic backpack. So, you know, I unpacked it at the other end. I'm like, is this it?
this is
what I packed.
Trousers.
It's all trousers in here. And, like, literally, I had to go to H&M and get a pack of the same underwear that I had in London because I packed, like, one pair. I just wasn't... I was just
well, you're
like,
not
well...
You're not thinking.
Yeah, I was just very... Because I like to think myself a very organised packer normally. Yeah. So I was very... I felt let down by myself. I was disappointed. So I pack this bag and I go, and then I stayed up in Chesterfield for about 10 days, two weeks, while, you know, we waited for a slot to open up at the crematorium.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you got to book yourself in. It's
yeah,
like
it takes,
GP.
Sometimes it's busy.
Yeah. They go, well, yeah, yeah, exactly. January. Oh, forget about it. So I was up there, and then my girlfriend at the time was in London, and I had to send her to my house to get my suit to wear.
Yeah.
And so she turns up at my house, and my housemate's like, oh, yeah, come in, of course. Where's Joel? And she was like, I'm picking up his suit. His mum died. He was like, what? Because I hadn't told him. I'd completely forgotten. And because we were 25-year-old
yeah.
dickhead men in
yeah.
a house share, we weren't communicating like that. It was like, if someone's not about, it's probably because they've just started shagging someone new
yeah.
or, like, they're on a 3-day rager or what. It's not the kind of WhatsApp communication.
Yeah, yeah.
It
hey,
was
babe.
Just,
are
yeah.
you okay?
None of that shit.
No,
it was
no.
like, if you come home and someone's in the kitchen, like, oh,
oh
what's
here.
Up? I haven't yeah. seen you for a while. And they've got, like, a haunted look. And they're like, I went to Vauxhall. I don't want to talk about it. So, yeah, so she went and got the suit. And he was like, oh my God, okay. And he did the nicest thing for me, which was truly, I think people forget to be nice to you sometimes when it happens because they get it out of their system by giving you like the long, sincere text message or the, like, anything I can do.
Yeah.
And they are like, okay, I've ticked that off my to-do
list. I've done it. I've told them.
I'm a good person. I'm a good person. And then you are burdened with all this crap, all this probate, all that shit. And then when people have done the, hey, you know, I just want you to know I'm thinking of you and whatever I can do to help, people kind of forget to just be nice to you.
Yeah, just give someone a break.
Just, it's weird. And what he did, I came home and, you know, obviously my bed was a mattress within a bed frame. I'm not a tidy person. Mm. I packed a load of trousers. My bedroom was a mess and he tidied it.
Oh, I want to cry. That's so nice.
It was truly one of the nicest things anyone's ever done to me.
It's so small as well. It's like when people go, oh, I didn't know how to help. You're like, just the smallest thing can just make, because you said you're so overwhelmed by life.
Yeah.
So someone taking away a lifeman thing you have to do is like, oh, thank you.
It was truly like, you know, I came back on a Sunday. I knew I was going to be going back to work the next day. I knew, you know, when you spend a Sunday on a train and you know that you have to get the bus at the other end and then you're only going to be home for about 8 hours and you have to do a load of laundry and you have to put it out to dry overnight and you know you're going to have to go to work tomorrow. You have to wake up, set the alarm again. And then just to come and knowing that you were, I was like, I'm used to coming home to mess.
Yeah.
I know how I live my life and it's chaotically. And to come back and just be like, fucking boom, it was so nice.
It's such a nice reminder that you don't have to do a lot.
Yeah.
Like sometimes people are like, oh, well, what can I possibly do? It's like, as if they're like, I can't bring them back. And you're like, no one can.
Tidy my bedroom.
Yeah, no one's asking you to like raise someone from the dead.
Yeah, don't raise. If anything, they'll come back weird. Like, don't do dark magic. Tidy my bedroom. Hoover up.
Tidy my bedroom or just sit at small things. Get shopping or just like make sure you don't have to think about someone. Be like, I've already done that. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, like one of the things I touch upon in the essay is I was living for 10 days in a house where the great irony is the fridge died on the same day she did. So the fridge didn't work, so we couldn't really have milk. We had like a little sort of cool box that you get from M&S, and we had like one pint of milk in there to make tea with. And so I was living like the kind of wild, weird, like, you know when you're in another city in a hotel and you don't really know where the shops are and for some reason you always get caught out by Sunday trading laws when you're in another city and you're like, well, I'm hungry, it's 5 p.m. on a Sunday, and you go out and it's like a deserted wasteland.
Because you're from London, you do because not understand London is 24 hours.
So I was living the kind of life where whatever I was eating was like pub grub, whatever I could get from Spa. Like, I wasn't planning ahead. I wasn't planning meals. I wasn't eating vegetables because I was like, well, no parents can remind me to do that. School's out. And I was just living like, just eating a lot of like fucking dairy Lunchables.
Oh, God.
Like, just sort of weird. Again, being a 25-year-old man without his shit together, the kind of food that you feed yourself with like, well, you know what I'll have for dinner? 3 pepperamis. So I was living like that. And I was saying, like, one of the things that would have been that my body and soul was craving is like a cooked meal from someone's house. And it would have been like, you talk about what you can do for people. What would have been amazing if someone said, come over, I'll make you dinner.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it needs to be. So, tidying my room was just like, it was like filling my lungs with air. It was a beautiful thing. Because, it was just nice to have someone be nice to me.
Yeah, I think you're really right. It's the small things and to carry on being nice, because what you went through is big.
Yeah.
It's big. It's huge. And I think sometimes as well, when people are in their 20s, I think it's the same. Like, when they were a kid, we're like, we're super nice. And when they're teenagers, we're like, we're nice. And then when they're 20s, you're like, you're an adult. Mm. And it's like, you said, the person you're describing, like, I think a lot of us, I'm sure a lot of people listening will relate to, like, you're just still a kid. At 25, you can still be a kid. You're just taller.
You're just a hairy child.
You're just a hairy child. And those small acts of kindness. Yeah. Well, Joel, thank you so much for talking to me about your experience. The book is so good. You are a very good talker, as you just proved, but you're a brilliant writer. Brilliant, 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 brilliant. And I think the essay about being an orphan, look, guys, don't give him any shit, okay?
Come on.
It's a really maybe read the essay at least. Hey, orphans.
Hey, orphans. Listen
the
up,
essay.
Orphans. I'm sick of your shit.
Read the essay first, and then if you're still cross, all right, but don't tweet him.
Fair play. If you're still mad about it.
But you don't, you know what? You don't have to tweet people. You can just tell your friend.
Yeah.
Just be like, hey, look what this guy did. It annoyed me.
He said he's an orphan. And then your friend will tell you that he is. They'll be like, yeah, stop being a mad orphan.
And obviously, love to all orphans out there. Thank you so much for talking to me about Tony and Hazel.
No, thank you.
Thank you. You can follow Joel on Twitter at Joel Golby, JoelGolby. And his book, Brilliant, 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 is brilliant and is out now. I cannot recommend it enough. Really do give it a read. It is about grief, but it's about all sorts of things. It's quite nice because some of the chapters are more lighthearted if you want a break from all that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. And the show was edited by Kate Holland, with thanks to Whistledown Studios, and the music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, you are not alone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.